knowing Dorothy had access to this kind of power. I wondered what the limits of her spying were. I also wondered if I might be able to use this magic painting myself instead of relying on old-fashioned sneaking around. "Why don't you just tell her how you feel?" the wizard asked casually, leaning back in his chair and buttering his scone. The Tin Woodman looked up from oiling his joints with a scandalized expression. "I couldn't possibly. I..." In the solarium, Dorothy turned to Glinda, and I yanked my head back behind the doorframe. "He's trying to turn him against me," she hissed. "Listen to him." Glinda shook her head. "That's not what it sounds like to me. It seems to me that they're discussing a matter closer to our mutual friend's stuffed heart." "No," Dorothy groaned. "Not this again." I tentatively leaned in to see Glinda shrug, put a red clawed finger to her red-painted lips, and point at the painting, where the wizard was patting the Tin Woodman's shoulder sympathetically. He tried to swat it away with one of his knife-tipped hands, but the wizard jerked back just in time to avoid getting sliced. "It's useless," the Tin Woodman said. "Everything I do for her, and still she will never love me the way I love her." I almost gave myself away by laughing out loud, but swallowed it just in time. The Tin Woodman was hopelessly in love with Dorothy. Really, it wasn't funny. It was sick. Well, okay. Maybe it was a little funny. Then I remembered what I knew about the Tin Woodman. He'd lost a love and accidentally chopped off his limbs with an enchanted axe. But what if the axe hadn't been enchanted at all? What if the Tin Woodman was just a guy who was known for taking things too far in the name of love? "Why not start small?" the wizard was advising. "Ask her for one dance at the next ball. That couldn't hurt, could it? And maybe it will lead to something else." The Tin Woodman's forehead crumpled like aluminum foil, then smoothed itself out again as he considered the idea. "Perhaps." "Ugh, it would literally hurt. He has knives for fingers," Dorothy complained. She clapped her hands again, and the painting changed to a motionless pastel image of a sunny seascape. "Enough. Encouraging the Tin Woodman's pathetic crush is treason. I could have the wizard's head for that." Glinda waved off the suggestion. "Oh, hush," she said. "You can't blame him for that. We've all found ourselves having those conversations with your metal admirer. He never changes the subject. It's impossible not to encourage him. Anyway, we shouldn't be rash. Remember when you disposed of the Wogglebug, and then a few months later you wanted another?" "I remember," Dorothy grumbled begrudgingly. "There were no more Wogglebugs, and there is only one wizard." Dorothy conceded with a nod and a pout, but I wasn't so sure. It looked like she might still prefer a world with no wizard at all. Glinda stood up. "Well, my dear." Glinda looked ready to leave, so that was my cue. I slipped away from the door and padded quietly down the hall. I wasn't so bad at this spy stuff, and I didn't even have a magic painting. Now, I just needed to figure out what to do with everything I'd just learned. In the banquet hall, scrubbing endlessly at the shiny marble floors, I had plenty of time to consider my next move. I had so many questions. Why wasn't the wizard back in the real world where he belonged? Why didn't Dorothy trust him? And what made him and his magic so dangerous that they couldn't risk dealing with him? But I wasn't just thinking about what they'd talked about. I was also thinking about that picture, wondering exactly how far it could see. Nox had warned me about using magic, but I wouldn't be casting anything since the painting was already enchanted. It was probably safe, right? I rushed through the rest of my cleaning. It wouldn't be up to Jelaya's standards, but I didn't care. I needed to do something. I'd been gathering information for 3 days and still didn't have a concrete plan to get closer to Dorothy. I could keep playing maid and, in the meantime, let Dorothy go on murdering her enemies and disfiguring her allies, all the while wasting my days cleaning until I slipped up and got beheaded for the crime of soap scum. Or I could take a risk, speed things up, and use her magic painting. Yeah, worth it. I tiptoed back to the solarium. This time, it was empty. I looked both ways down the corridor to make sure no one was coming, and crept into the room, approaching the picture. It had changed again. Now it was a painting of a quaint little cottage, like something you'd see in a dentist's office. I wasn't sure it would work. The picture was probably just a normal painting without Dorothy's magic to make it do its thing. Even so, I looked around nervously one more time, and then faced it. "Magic picture," I whispered, trying to mimic Dorothy's sharp command, only quietly. "Show me."
Ahem.
I'd been caught. Without thinking, without even turning around, and definitely without considering Nox's warning about magic, I cast an invisibility spell. My cover was blown. Escape was now the only thing on my mind. I disappeared only for a second. Before I could even move my invisible feet, a feeling like getting splashed by a bucket of cold water came over me. Just like that, I was visible again. My spell canceled. I stood smack in the middle of Dorothy's solarium, exposed. The wizard stood before me. Chapter 29. The wizard took a step toward me and tipped his hat, revealing a bald, shiny head with a horseshoe of curly gray hair. He smiled at me with a mischievous twinkle in his eye and gave a little bow. I'd expected to come face to face with one of Dorothy's underlings, or maybe even her awfulness in the flesh. With some effort, I calmed the fight-or-flight reflex, especially since flight had already failed. The wizard wasn't one of Dorothy's allies, but that didn't make him one of my friends.
"Oh, excuse me, sir," I managed to get out, trying to play it cool. "I was just dusting."
The wizard looked pointedly at my empty hands.
"Yes, well," he replied thoughtfully, "spick and span as this whole place appears, I suppose one would need an invisible maid for the invisible dust."
I let out a nervous laugh that was only half feigned.
"I don't know what you mean, sir," I said, and tried to walk around him.
The wizard took a step backward, getting in my way. He smiled at me again and tipped his chin, almost like we'd just accomplished some kind of fancy dance step. It took some menace out of the moment. Even so, I took a second to size the old man up. The wizard looked like a handsome, aging movie star. His clothes were perfectly tailored,
his suit a stiff brocade like it was cut from a tapestry. Soft silk ruffles peeked out from his collar, and cufflinks with little silver W's punctuated his wrists. He touched the brim of his hat as I appraised him. Compared to the rest of his outfit, the black hat with its black band looked simple and worn, almost like it came from another time. "It must have been a trick of the light," the wizard said impishly, waving at the solarium's dozens of twinkling windows. "A sleight of body, perhaps." I knew he was screwing with me, but I stared at him with the inoffensive blandness I'd picked up from the rest of the maids.
"If that's all, sir, I have more chores to be done," I said with an excess of politeness.
The wizard fixed me with a mysterious, cat-like smirk.
"Ah, that's what we like around the palace. Initiative. Gumption. Spunk. It seems to me that I used to know someone else like that, too."
My mind immediately went to the most obvious person. He was talking about Dorothy.
"Of course, I'm speaking about myself," he said.
He gave me a sly wink, like he knew it wasn't what I'd been expecting him to say.
"What's your name, child?"
"Astrid," I said quickly. Maybe too quickly. This guy was crafty. I didn't want to give anything else away. Of course, I knew what everyone knew about the wizard, that he'd come to Oz in a balloon, that he'd set himself up as its ruler in Ozma's absence, and that he wasn't a real wizard at all, just a guy with a lot of fancy tricks. And, of course, there was the fact that he had supposedly left Oz just around the same time Dorothy had, to go back to his own world. My world. Clearly, some parts of the story weren't quite accurate. For starters, he was still here in Oz. But for some reason, in all my lessons with the Order, Glamora and Gert and the rest had never brought up the wizard at all. Had he ever really left in the first place? Did they know he was here? I wondered how it all connected. The wizard had turned away from me and was examining the painting. He leaned in close, like he was super interested in the brushwork, and then stepped back and ran his finger along the edge of the gilded gold frame.
"I see you missed a spot, Astrid," he said, holding up his index finger, which was perfectly clean. "You'll have to be more careful about that next time. You're lucky it was me who noticed. Others around here get quite upset when things are where they don't belong."
"It won't happen again, sir," I said. I inched toward the door. But part of me wanted to stay. It seemed like the wizard was trying to warn me, which meant maybe I could trust him, or at least get some valuable information out of him, making this whole excursion to the solarium not a total screw-up.
"How long have you been working in the palace, Astrid?" he asked, seeing me linger.
I hesitated.
"Several years now," I said finally, figuring it was a vague enough answer that it was probably safe.
"And what do you think of your job, of the princess?"
"It's wonderful, sir," I said. "I'm so lucky to be able to work for someone as wise and beautiful and generous as Dorothy."
"Ah, yes," the wizard replied, as if we were discussing the weather. "Dorothy certainly has ways of keeping her servants smiling. After all, the minute you start grumbling, you'll be sent off for an official attitude adjustment from the Scarecrow."
I wasn't sure how to respond. The wizard seemed like he was tempting me to be critical of Dorothy. I wanted to trust him.
but he'd already caught me doing magic, and I didn't want to give him more ammunition if he wasn't on my side.
He almost seemed to be hinting to me that he was,
but just because Glinda and Dorothy hated him didn't mean he was a good guy.
"The Scarecrow is so brilliant," I finally said. "Without him, we wouldn't have so many of the advances in magical technology that make Oz the place it is now."
The wizard smiled sadly and fiddled with his boutonniere.
"Of course," he said. "Where would Oz be if not for the Scarecrow's great experiments? Ravens with human ears. Men with bicycle wheels instead of legs. It's a glorious world we live in now, isn't it? It almost reminds me of the one I came from."
At that, he looked back up at me. It was almost like he was trying to gauge my reaction. I didn't let myself react.
"Yes, sir," was all I said.
"I hear," the wizard mused, "that the Scarecrow is working on his greatest experiment yet."
I perked up. This was exactly the type of information that would be valuable to the Order. I had to be careful not to seem too interested, though.
"In his lab, sir?" I asked casually.
"Oh, yes," the wizard replied. "Day and night in his secret laboratory. Not sleeping. Probably working his fingers to the... Well, I'm not sure if the Scarecrow actually has bones, but you get the point."
I nodded enthusiastically and tried not to choke on my own fake sincerity.
"He sacrifices so much."
The wizard's face lit up.
"Those who have sacrificed always have the most to lose," he said, watching me closely. "Ever hear that expression, Astrid?"
I shook my head. "No, sir."
"Ah. You will, my dear. You will."
What the hell did that mean?
Before I could ask, the wizard tipped his hat and strolled out. My heart was pounding on my way back to my room.
What was the wizard trying to tell me? Did he have some clue as to who I was, or what I was here to do? It was like trying to put a 5,000-piece jigsaw puzzle together without the picture on the box.
Ozma. The wizard. The palace was full of cryptic oddities that I couldn't quite get a handle on. Who could I trust? It was almost like the universe wanted to provide me with an answer when I opened my door to find Pete sitting on my bed.
Chapter 30. I jumped back and gasped. I had been starting to wonder whether Pete even existed at all, and now he was sitting on my bed without a care in the world, like he belonged there. I had to remind myself that it wasn't my bed. It was Astrid's bed, which meant he was here to see her, not me. But why? All I wanted to do was run over to Pete and hug him, to tell him, "It's me, Amy, and I'm okay." I wanted to tell him about Mombi and the Order, and about Gert and how she had died, about why I was here and what I was going to do. I couldn't tell him any of those things, though. I closed the door behind me, just in case anyone passed by in the hallway, and then tried to get my head together. "What are you doing here?" I asked, in the most non-committal voice I could manage. I didn't want to seem too surprised to see him. I still didn't know why he was in Astrid's room. What if they were friends? A thought struck me. What if they were a thing? That would be awkward. Pete stood up from the bed.
His face spread into a wide grin, and he stepped over to me and wrapped his wiry arms around me in a huge hug. I didn't let myself give in to it, but I didn't fight it either.
"You made it," he said, sounding choked up. "You're here."
My entire body stiffened. I pulled myself out of his grip and pushed him away. "Of course I'm here. It's my room."
"I came as soon as I could. Sometimes it's hard for me to get away."
I didn't know what Pete was playing at. Yes, he had been kind to me. He had been my friend. But he'd been cagey, too, and I still didn't know who or what he was. I still didn't know if I could trust him, given what I now knew from the order. As much as I wanted to, I knew that I couldn't. Nothing was safe around here.
"I don't know what you're talking about," I said carefully, "and I'm not supposed to have anyone in my room. You should leave."
Pete put a soft hand on my shoulder.
"It's okay, Amy," he said. "You don't have to pretend. I know it's you. Your secret's safe with me. At least, it's as safe as Star is."
He reached into his pocket and pulled out my pet rat. When her little white face peered up at me and she gave a squeak, I couldn't hold back anymore and tears welled up in my eyes. All the uncertainty and fear and strangeness of the last few weeks came flooding through my body at the familiar sight of her. I reached out my hands and Star crawled into them.
"How did you know?" I asked, looking up at Pete. "How did you find me?"
"You can change your face, Amy. But I'd know you anywhere," he said. It wasn't any kind of answer. I wiped a tear from my cheek and studied Pete. His expression was as impassive and mysterious as his words. I clasped Star to my chest.
"Is there something wrong with my disguise?" I asked. It was something I'd been worried about since my run-in with Ozma, and if Pete could see through it, what was to stop someone like Dorothy or Glinda from realizing I wasn't who I said I was?
"That's not it," Pete said. "Whoever cast the spell knew what they were doing. It will fool them all. Everyone except me." I suddenly remembered what they'd told me before I left the Order. That I'd have a handler in the palace, another one of the Order's agents who would be keeping an eye on me, someone to watch my back and, eventually, give me instructions. I wondered if that someone could be Pete. It would make a lot of sense. He could have been the one who had led Mombi to me in the first place when I was back in the dungeon. But I knew that I wasn't supposed to have any contact with my handler at all, not unless it was totally necessary. I wasn't even supposed to know who it was. If it was Pete, I was pretty sure he wouldn't be risking the plan by sneaking into my room. "I asked some of the other maids about you," I said. "They'd never heard of a gardener with green eyes."
"Yeah, they don't really know me around here," Pete replied.
He sat back down on the edge of my bed. I stayed standing.
"You told me before that you worked here."
"I do. It's complicated."
Complicated.
The word thudded between us. It was my least favorite word. Dad had used it just before he left me and Mom and never came back. I felt myself getting angry again.
"How am I supposed to trust you when you won't tell me the first thing about you?" I asked, my voice rising. I'd used up all my subtlety in my conversation with the wizard. I was done with all this coy crap.
"It's complicated, Amy. I can't tell you, Amy. It's a bunch of bullshit. You need to start explaining." As I raged, I felt my palm open. Magic tingled my fingertips like they were itching, and I knew it was my knife. It wanted to come to me.
Whether or not I trusted Pete, my knife didn't. It was trying to tell me something, that he was dangerous. For now, though, I willed it to stay out of sight. I'd already slipped with my magic once today. It couldn't happen again. Pete sighed and looked up at me with apologetic eyes. "Look," he said, "I don't work in the palace exactly, not inside at least. I'm not really even supposed to be in here. I work on the grounds, in the greenhouse."
The greenhouse? I'd seen it from the window when I'd been cleaning.
I sat down next to him on the bed. It made sense, sort of. At the very least, it explained why he always smelled vaguely of flowers. It didn't explain everything, though. I knew in my gut that there was more to his story. But wasn't there always more to everyone's story around here? To survive in Dorothy's Oz, a person had to have their secrets. I would let Pete keep his. For now. "How did you get back here?" he asked me. "Why are you back here, after what almost happened? Who disguised you? Who are you working for?" He took my hand in his and clasped it tight, but I looked away. If Pete could have his secrets, I could have mine, too. "Long story," I said. Pete frowned, but I didn't care. I was just giving him a taste of his own medicine. "I have time," he said. "Good. That means you have time to tell me about the wizard," I replied, reminding myself to stay focused on my mission. Pete bit his lip. "Okay," he said, disappointment in his voice. "If that's what you want to talk about." "Spill it," I commanded. "There's not a lot to tell," he said, averting his eyes. "I don't know a lot about the wizard. No one does." I pulled my hand away and placed it in my lap. Star was racing around the room, sniffing everything. "Tell me what you do know, then. Why is he here? What happened? What's his deal?" Pete paused like he was trying to decide how much was safe to say, and then nodded. "There are different theories. The wizard left in his balloon just before Dorothy used magic to go home. You know that part of the story." I nodded. "For a while he was gone, and then he wasn't. That's where it gets a little hazy."
"Someone brought him back?"
"Maybe. Or maybe the balloon never took him home at all. No one really knows. What we do know is that somewhere along the way, he spent some time with the witches. That's how he became a real wizard instead of a fake one."
I jerked my face toward him in surprise.
"What witches?"
"The ones who are left. The ones Dorothy didn't kill. Not counting Glinda, obviously, though her twin sister is one of them. Their leader's a witch named Mombi. Anyway, between the time the wizard left and the time he showed up back at the palace, she and the wizard became allies. They aren't any more, though. He came back to the palace pretty soon after Dorothy returned. Apparently, he and Mombi had a falling out."
Now, this was getting interesting. Still, I kept my face expressionless. I didn't want him to know that I knew Mombi or any of the other witches. "I talked to the wizard today," I said. "He was weird. He caught me doing something, but I don't think he cared. I think he might know who I am."
Pete's eyebrows raised.
"It's possible," he said. "The wizard always seems to know more than everyone else. It has something to do with the kind of magic he uses. It's different from the usual Oz magic. He's a real wizard now. The question is what kind of wizard he is."
"Exactly. The usual question. Good or wicked?
Dorothy doesn't trust him, Pete continued, but she thinks she can use him. I don't even know if the wizard himself knows whose side he's on.
What if he's figured me out? I asked. What if he tells Dorothy what he saw?
Pete twisted his mouth in thought. I don't think he'd do that, he said, but I'd stay away from him if I were you.
I nodded, but I wasn't so sure. What if the wizard was supposed to be my contact here in the palace? His arrival pretty much synchronized with mine, and if everyone believed he'd had a falling out with Mombi, that could make for good cover. There was still so much I didn't know.
What about Ozma? I asked. I saw her, too. I think it was the real Ozma, not one of her holograms.
Pete's face twitched, just barely, but enough for me to notice.
She's around. I've never met her. She's not herself. Dorothy did something to her. Listen, just ignore her. That's what everyone else does.
She kissed me, I said.
That sounds like Ozma, he said. She's in her own little world. It's kind of sad.
Suddenly, his eyes glazed over. His hands trembled at his sides. He tried to shove them in his pockets.
Pete?
He began to flicker.
I have to go.
Before I could stop him, Pete slipped out the door and into the hallway. He didn't even say goodbye. At my feet, Star tittered and scratched. I picked her up and snuggled her against my chest, sighing.
Well, I said to my loyal pet rat, at least I have one ally here I can trust.
Chapter 31.
How about you carry a poison capsule in your little jaws and drop it into her mint julep? Think you could pull that off?
Star stared at me, then scratched my chest with her tiny claws and went back to sleep. I guess she wasn't into my idea.
It was early the next morning. I hadn't slept well and had spent most of the night tossing and turning, much to Star's chittering annoyance, and now I was up before the magic bell at my bedside had even summoned me to my chores. I sighed and plucked Star from my body, placing her back on the bed. As I pulled on a clean uniform, I couldn't help rolling my eyes at the prospect of another day of redundant chores. The mysteries around the palace, Ozma, the wizard, Pete, were piling up, but I still wasn't any closer to figuring out a way to kill Dorothy. How many days of boring housework would I have to put up with before the Order made contact? If I wasn't careful, way more careful than I'd been yesterday in the Solarium, it wouldn't matter. I'd be back in the dungeon. Turning to face the mirror, I checked myself for presentability, and then searched my still strange face, looking for a sign of what Pete had seen in it. The thing that had tipped him off that I wasn't who I appeared to be. I found nothing. I almost jumped out of my shoes at a knock on the door. Now, this was new. Before, if someone had needed me, they summoned me with the magic bell. No one had ever knocked on the door before. "Just a moment," I called out nervously, grabbing Star and shoving her under my bed.
"Stay,"
I whispered urgently. She seemed to get the picture. When I saw Jelaya waving cheerily at me from the other side of the threshold, I stifled my surprise. Maybe she did a weekly inspection of the maids' quarters. If so, I hoped Star would have the rat smarts to stay out of sight.
"Astrid," she chirped, "how pretty you look. And aren't you just the luckiest girl in the world today?"
I fixed a robotic grin across my face. "Every day is lucky when you work for Dorothy," I replied. Jelaya chuckled.
If she sensed my complete lack of sincerity, she didn't let on about it.
"Now, that's the attitude we like around here," she said. "But today's luckier than most, dear. You have a very special assignment. You're going to help me prepare Dorothy for her activities. How does it feel to be the new second handmaid?"
I stepped back in genuine surprise.
"Me? Dorothy's new lady-in-waiting?" "Yes, you silly goose," Jelaya said. "Don't act so surprised. You've been here longer than almost anyone, and you've proven yourself just as loyal and lovely as any of us. Now, come, we don't want to keep Her Highness waiting."
"But what about Hannah?" I asked, following Jelaya down the hall at a businesslike clip. As of yesterday at lunch, Hannah had been the second handmaid. She hadn't been in her seat at dinner, but I just assumed Dorothy had needed her for something. What had happened to her? Jelaya looked over at me and shook her head sadly.
"Hannah is in the infirmary," she said. "She won't be returning to service in the palace."
That didn't sound good. I put a hand to my chest, trying to mask my curiosity with sisterly concern. "What happened to her? Will she be okay?"
"Unfortunately, the lion took a liking to her. Too much of a liking," she sighed. "It wasn't the poor thing's fault. The lion has always had appetite issues. There was nothing Hannah could have done."
"Did he eat her?" Images of Gert melting on the floor of the forest clearing back in Gilliken flew into my head. She had died trying to protect me, to protect all of us. Meanwhile, the lion was still alive, maiming guards and running around attacking innocent servant girls for no reason.
"Well, not all of her," Jelaya said.
Her smile had never wavered.
"She'll be fine in no time. And after she recovers enough, the scarecrow will repair her body. She'll be better than ever. She's actually quite pleased. It's an honor to enter the service of the Tin Soldiers."
Pleased. Sure. I was burning with anger. Being mauled by a lion and becoming one of the Scarecrow's gruesome science projects was supposed to be an honor now? As the heat rose in my chest, I felt my invisible knife again, pulsing along with my heartbeat somewhere inside my body. It wanted to come out. It wanted to do some damage. I willed it away.
"Is the lion still here? In the palace?" "No," Jelaya replied as we turned a corner and headed up the grand staircase toward Dorothy's quarters. "Glinda decided it would be best for him to return to the forest for the time being. We don't want another incident. And he hasn't been himself since..."
Suddenly, she stopped herself. "Since what?" I'd wondered if he'd been affected by what Gert had done to him in the woods, but I couldn't see anything specific the day I saw him in the garden. She looked away.
"Never mind that. Aren't you excited about your new assignment?"
I was excited, but not for the reasons Jelaya thought I should be. I was scared, too. Getting close to Dorothy was part of my mission, but this was all happening so quickly. I knew from listening to the other girls at mealtime that being one of Dorothy's ladies-in-waiting was a coveted position, reserved only for the most cheerful and pliable of the servants. "Why me?" I asked.
"You've impressed the princess over the years, and you've impressed me."
Jelaya lowered her voice and leaned in close.
"You work well under pressure, dear. You'll need that."
I thought about our encounter with the Tin Woodman in the tight confines of the garden annex. I assumed Jelaya had blocked that incident out, stored it down in her special utility closet of denial. Apparently, it made more of an impression than I thought.
That and...
Jelaya glanced over at me sidelong. The wizard also put in a good word for you. I stopped in my tracks.
The wizard? Oh, yes. He came to me just last night and told me how pleased he was with your dusting.
True, the wizard is always full of compliments, but not usually when it comes to housekeeping.
You must have made quite the impression. I thought it was only fair that you get your chance.
I was just doing my job, I said, still not sure what to make of all this. Was the wizard trying to help me? Was he working for the Order, helping me make my way into Dorothy's inner sanctum? Jelaya turned to me and looked me up and down, mistaking my confusion for reluctance.
If you aren't up for this, Astrid, I'm sure any of the other girls would jump at the chance.
No, of course I am. It's just... Poor Hannah.
This isn't the time for mourning.
We go on, she scolded. We only have one job, and that's to please Dorothy. Yeah, Jelaya kinda needed a slap. But all these maids were so brainwashed, I couldn't fault her for being callous. We arrived at the door to Dorothy's private chambers. It was green and heavy and gaudy as hell, carved from solid emerald and etched with an ornate floral pattern, the grooves lined with gold and jewels. Jelaya gave me a last once-over before we entered.
Here, she said, digging into the pocket of her apron and pulling out a little gold pot. We're not really supposed to use it, but just a little bit won't hurt.
She unscrewed the lid and held it out to me. I cautiously dipped my finger inside and came back with a glob of shimmering, greasy stuff that reminded me of lip gloss. Indigo's face popped into my head, and I closed my eyes for a second, remembering what she'd told me about it. I smeared it across my lips, feeling a tingle as the perma smile took effect. It wasn't exactly comfortable. It felt like the corners of my mouth were being held apart by clothespins, but I guessed that was better than accidentally letting Dorothy see me frown. I returned the canister to Jelaya, and she took a little for herself, refreshing her smile before placing the goop back in her apron. When her hand came back out, she handed me a silver hairbrush.
Remember, it's 1,000 strokes. Not 1,001, and not 999. Don't lose count. Dorothy will know. She always does. We've lost more than one girl that way.
If there's one thing to say about Hannah, it's that she certainly could count. Jelaya knocked on the door and, after getting no response, pushed it open. As she entered, she looked over her shoulder and whispered back at me with one more bit of advice.
Whatever you do, she said, don't touch the shoes.
Dorothy's room was wall-to-wall pink. Pepto-Bismol pink, cotton candy pink, sunset pink, and every nauseating shade in between. A canopied bed was encircled with pink silken drapes, the floor was wall-to-wall pink shag carpet, and the ceiling overhead was covered in what looked like pink rhinestones that would probably make you go blind if you stared at them too long. If Madison Pendleton ever made it to Oz, I thought, she could probably get a job as Dorothy's personal interior decorator. In the center of the room, a few feet from the bed, some kind of green powder had been sprinkled onto the carpet in a wide circle. Inside it, a little black terrier was racing around in excitement, chasing his own tail.
I knew exactly who that was.
Toto.
When he spotted us, he bared his tiny teeth at me and growled. Jelaya stepped carefully around him. I did the same, and as I did, Toto lunged at me, but hit an invisible barrier. Undaunted, he got back up on his little feet and tried again. I jumped, despite myself.
"Don't mind him," Jelaya said, waving her hand. "He's having another time out. He's a sweet little thing, but he sometimes has problems controlling himself."
It was no surprise that Dorothy's little dog was as vicious as she was. As for Dorothy herself, though, she was nowhere to be found. Jelaya pulled the fluffy bedspread a hair tighter as she passed by.
"Yoo-hoo!" she sing-songed. "Your Majesty!"
There was no response. "She's probably in her favorite place," Jelaya said, pulling open a door. Calling it a closet was an understatement. It was as big as one of the caves back in the Order. There were dresses, mini and maxi, corseted and flowy, and ball gowns and short shorts and skinny pants. The clothes were endless in their variety, but they all had one thing in common. They all bore a familiar, blue-checked print. When I reached out and ran my fingers against the fabric of a checkered jumpsuit, it dislodged itself from the others and floated out ahead of us as if it were being worn by an invisible model. I touched a hat next, and it joined the dress on its strut down the runway. Jelaya gave me a sharp glance and touched both items, launching them right back to their original spots. I grimaced in silent apology. We continued through the closet, with no Dorothy in sight. Besides her royal awfulness, there was something else that was conspicuously absent amidst the rows and rows of clothes. There wasn't a single pair of shoes. We finally found Dorothy in the back, stretched out on a chaise covered in pink paisley swirls. She was wearing a long silk robe, still in that blue gingham pattern, and the toes of her red heels poked out from underneath it. Even in her pajamas, she never took them off. Did she sleep in them? "You're late," Dorothy said icily, looking up from a fashion magazine called Her Majesty. Her own face perma-smiled at me from the cover.
"I'm sorry, ma'am," Jelaya said, casting her eyes to the floor. "There was a disturbance with one of the other maids. Astrid here will be taking Hannah's place."
Dorothy glowered at me. "Can she count?"
"She's a wonderful counter," Jelaya said.
I nodded in agreement, but Dorothy had already stopped caring. She threw her head back and stretched, clapping her hands together.
"Where are we on the guest list for the ball?" she demanded.
"Everyone who's anyone will be there," Jelaya asserted. "Ginger, Polychrome. I even heard from Scraps, the patchwork girl."
Dorothy frowned, like she wasn't all that impressed with her guest list. Well, maybe if she weren't always exiling and executing people, they would want to come to her parties.
"Whatever," Dorothy snapped, and pointed to the tray of nail polish that was sitting on a small vanity in the corner.
"Anna, nail polish." It took me a second, and a look from Jelaya, to figure out that Anna meant me. I nodded shyly and brought the tray over, wondering where I was supposed to put it. Jelaya just tapped it quickly, and it floated right out of my hands, hanging steady in the air.
"What would you like today?" Jelaya asked, surveying the rainbow of polishes.
I was happy to see that at least when it came to her manicures,
Dorothy had a sense of variety. There must have been at least 100 different colors. Dorothy sat up and swung her feet to the ground. As she did, her shoes made a ruby-red comet's tail through the air. I had to stifle a gasp. It was like they were glowing from the inside, like they wanted me to notice them. Jelaya and Dorothy were prattling on, deciding on the best nail art for the day. Stripes, or swirls, or sparkles. They sounded like they were talking from the end of a long tunnel. I couldn't take my eyes off the shoes. I was transfixed. So beautiful. So shiny. So perfect. Whoa! Get a grip, Amy. I'd taken pride in wearing the same ratty pair of knockoff Converse since freshman year. They were broken in, comfortable, and something the Madison Pendletons of the world wouldn't wear in a million years. I'd never given a crap about shoes before, especially not the bedazzled variety. So why now? Something wasn't right. Even as I reasoned with myself, the glow from the shoes intensified. I realized they were shining just for me. That Dorothy and Jelaya couldn't see them, not like I could. They were calling to me. A numbness spread over the skeptical part of my mind. I wondered what it would be like to have people wait on me the way we were waiting on Dorothy. What it would be like to have a closet full of dresses. What it would be like to have power. Power that came from those shoes. I want them, I thought. I need them. I should just take them. I was vaguely aware of my body moving, my hands clenching and unclenching. Slowly, I reached toward Dorothy's feet. Astrid! Jelaya warned, yanking my elbow back. I ignored her. I wanted those shoes. Astrid! She said again, this time angrily. She snapped her fingers right in my face, tearing my eyes away from Dorothy's feet. I blinked. Looking up at Jelaya, I felt like myself again, and I knew that the shoes had been doing something to me. Jelaya just glared, as if to say, "Didn't I warn you?" Dorothy was busy holding up a bottle of polish to the light, thinking about her impending manicure. When I glanced in her direction, I saw her eyes narrow and her mouth twitch up in the tiniest sneer. Had she noticed? Did she know what her shoes were doing? Astrid, Jelaya ordered firmly, the princess needs her hair brushed. 1,000 strokes exactly, Dorothy snapped, still not looking up at me. I took a deep breath and moved behind her. I grabbed the brush from my pocket and pulled it slowly through Dorothy's thick auburn locks. Her hair smelled like lemons and sunshine. I expected there to be a rotten note underneath, but there wasn't. It was all sweetness and light. This is what evil smells like, I realized. 1, 2, 3, 4, I counted silently, being careful not to yank too hard when I hit a rare tangle. It was actually sort of relaxing. I felt much better now that I had something to focus on other than the shoes. Let's do the hearts, Dorothy finally decided. Use the pink glitter, blue for the base. She extended her hands to Jelaya, and I realized that there was something gnarled about them. The rest of Dorothy was perfect, but her hands looked like an old woman's. Jelaya pulled up a stool and picked out the first color. Dorothy began to hum a low waltz under her breath while Jelaya got to work. Jelaya was an artist. Her fingers moved delicately and quickly over Dorothy's nails, tracing the outlines of tiny hearts without even the tiniest mistake. Still, you could tell it wasn't easy. Jelaya's brow crinkled in concentration, and it quickly began to shine with sweat as she worked.
"Tell me the gossip," Dorothy demanded. "No one ever tells me anything. There must be something interesting going on in this palace of mine. I know you know. The servants always do."
"Let me think," Jelaya said.
As she spoke, she glanced up at me, probably to check on my progress. I was at 200. I met her eyes, flashed her a reassuring smile, and then nearly nicked the back of Dorothy's ear with the brush. Dorothy didn't even notice. She just went on humming her stupid waltz. But Jelaya did, flinching on my behalf at the close call. That's how it happened. Jelaya's hand slipped. A drop of nail polish fell from the brush. I watched it go, as if in slow motion. The sparkly pink polish landed in a blob on the pink carpet. Dorothy shrieked. The thing is, the polish almost matched the color of the carpet. Even if it wouldn't come out, it was just a tiny little drop. No one would notice. But Dorothy would know.
"You idiot!" she screamed.
Jelaya didn't move. Her lips twitched at the corners of her frozen smile.
"Princess Dorothy, Your Highness, I am so very sorry. It..."
She dropped to her knees in panic, dabbing frantically at the carpet with a handkerchief to blot out her mistake. But Dorothy put her hand out to halt the maid.
"Don't. You'll just smear it and make it worse."
Jelaya looked up, eyes impossibly wide above her frozen smile. But Dorothy was over it. Sort of. She shook her head.
"Should I send for soap and water?" Jelaya asked. "I'm certain I can have it out in a moment."
"Soap and water," Dorothy repeated, snorting. She muttered something under her breath, and a sizzle of energy sparked from her fingertips. The minuscule stain instantly disappeared.
"The atrocious mess is not the point, Jelaya. The point is that you were careless. Very careless. I'm used to better from you."
"I'm sorry,"
Jelaya repeated, still trembling, sitting back down on her stool.
"So very sorry. I can't imagine what came over me."
I swallowed. In a way, Jelaya was covering for me. I'd distracted her. Dorothy's voice suddenly filled with syrupy kindness.
"Oh, Jelaya, dear, you can't cry over a little spilled nail polish. I'll think of some way for you to make it up to me."
I resumed my brushing. 201. I hadn't forgotten my place. Jelaya picked up the bottle of polish. I expected her to be relieved, but she was still quivering.
"I'll just need to think of the appropriate punishment," Dorothy said.
"Yes, Your Highness.
I wonder what it should be."
Jelaya's hand was shaking so much that she had to put the bottle down again.
"Did I tell you to stop?" Dorothy asked.
Jelaya's eyes widened and she picked the bottle back up to continue. Her mouth was still stretched ear to ear, but the rest of her face was crumpled in terror. This was what Dorothy did to people. I had known Dorothy was cruel, but the joy she took in her cruelty filled me with disgust. I thought of Madison Pendleton and all her minions, the people who had taken the same delight in tormenting me back in school.